Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Andeham Sri Guru Sri Atav Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavangsa Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parajana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Vipa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Okay, cheers here. Have a look. Cheers. Pass it over to me.
So, Hare Krishna, my daughter is 16 years of age and 11 standing, not following Krishna consciousness. I came to know she is writing messages and receiving also from friends, boy and girl, both of which are not appropriate. What to do? Whether to send to school, she is rebellious and may be after 18, she may go for home day. Well, Srila Prabhupada had a reason for calling the educational system, especially in America, a slaughterhouse. It is a slaughterhouse of the soul. It means that we are killing our spiritual opportunity by materialistic propaganda, that life is simply meant for gratifying our senses. The children, in, whether nowadays, whether it's in the USA or Europe or even in India here, or when they're in their teenage years, the atmosphere is surcharged with materialistic ideas, the concept being the purpose of life is simply gratifying my bodily pleasures. So Prabhupada called it a slaughterhouse. Therefore, he made efforts to have gurus so that the children were not in such an atmosphere where the spiritual life would be ruined. So it's difficult at this age, this young lady is 16 years old. And what happens? I know something from experience living in the USA that even though we raise our children outside of the school system, means we raise them in homeschooling, but we learn from our children other things about some of the other devotee children in the community where we work and what goes on in the public school system. So, what happens is the children in this age group, 15, 16, 17, the most important people in their life are their friends. They cannot even think of not going along with their friends if they challenge them or if they don't agree to the activities and the attitudes of their friends, then they'll be completely ostracized. And at that stage, unfortunately, very high percentage of the time, the children will choose their friends as more important than the parents. They will care more about what their friends think than they will care about what their parents think. So it is, without a doubt, a very dangerous situation. And what to do? The option is to try to homeschool them, although there may be very strong resistance from them because they don't want to miss daily being with their friends and texting them. So anyway, it's a big, knotted up mess. Therefore, as we briefly mentioned yesterday, that what is happening under the guidance of Bhakti Vikas Swami among many of his disciples is encouraging them to try to, as early as reasonably possible, move out of these other cities and raise their children in a wonderful, sattvic atmosphere where they can advance in Krishna consciousness.
This address to myself. Earlier you said that Sri Kapila Muni forgave the 60,000 sons of Saga for their offense because he remembered a good deed that was done in the past. What was the good deed that Lord Kapila remembered? I didn't exactly say that. This is from the commentary on the name Kritagya by Sri Parashara Bhatta, who said that when Angshuman, who came in the same dynasty, he came and bowed down before Lord Kapila and begged on behalf of his ancestors forgiveness. Then because of the good act of Angshuman, then Lord Kapila forgave. So that.
These questions are addressed to Maharaj.
Yeah, go ahead.
How can we know that we have committed an offense of wrath, be it to the Holy
any Nama or to the devotee Vaishnava? If known, how can we correct the offense? Well, there are more kinds of offenses, I hate to say. There's Seyaparat, also there's Namaparat, there's Ruvaparat, there's Tamaparat, there's Vaishnavaparat. Many kinds of aparat. All kinds of aparat can be avoided and eventually nullified by stringing the third verse of the Shikshastra around your neck and remembering it every day. Sarnada Pisa Nichena Dorada Sishma Amanya Malinina Kirtiya Salahariya. But that order to become more humble than the blade of grass, more tolerant than the tree, ready to offer all respects to the other, expecting any honor, that's a little difficult. That takes some time. In the meanwhile, we can gauge our spiritual advancement in a number of ways. If we're talking about non-aparat, most of us, by default, we come into Krishna consciousness as non-aparatis. At least, it's very hard for the beginning person to concentrate the mind enough to not commit some sort of offense against the world. Even there are 10 possibilities, 10 categories, I should say. The easy way to know if we offend the holy name is if we don't start crying when we chant. That's what Narottam Das Thakur says. Gauranga Bodhi Hale Kulaka Shriya. When I begin to chant the name of Gauranga, he likes, I think the body trembles. I feel ecstasy and I cry. Shri Prabhupada writes in the famous second canto of Purport about the Namaka. This is the test. If we don't feel ecstasy when we chant the holy name, it means the only reason can be because we have committed some sort of offense. That's why Shri Prabhupada asked us to chant, to recite at least 10 offenses every day, just to get it into our heads that this is something that's real, we have to live with it, we have to do something about it, and it's got to be a daily practice. So that's Namaparat. The other one mentioned here is Vaishnavaparat. This is a little more touchy because sometimes Vaishnava may be offended, or I should say, sometimes we may have offended Vaishnava, but that Vaishnava is not offended. The Krishna is offended because the Vaishnava is considered to be the best of the lotus feet of the Lord, and they're more humble than a blade of grass. They don't think they're worthy of being offended by anyone. They feel themselves to be offenders. But for that very reason, we have to be very, very, very careful with them. Again, Srila Prabhupada has asked us every day to pay our obeisances to the devotees. And we should do this conscientiously. Conscientiously means consciously. Because after all, you cannot become Christian conscious if you're not conscious to begin with. So, one way to undo this offense is that if we offend the devotee, is to go to that devotee and beg forgiveness. And mostly the devotees are very merciful and kind. And if they're sincere about that, then they will immediately overlook it. Every life's experience that we can expect to encounter is within the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we find many, many occasions there are two devotees who have some misunderstanding of some sort, there may have been some offense committed. And we see what is the character of the devotee who's involved here and how do they reconcile the situation. These folks are here for us to learn from and to apply in our lives. So the whole key is to know when we have committed a Vaishnavaparat, that sometimes it's not so easy to know. So we have to be very careful. Always we have to be very careful about that and look for it. And I mean, I don't know, not so much anymore nowadays, but when I first joined the movement, it was very common for devotees to just approach each other and say, if I've ever committed any offense, please forgive me, and
accept my obeisances. Again, this is where Prabhupada instituted that practice, this sort of one. This one is saying Nam Nam Kari, Nam Nam Kari Bhagavad Nish Sarva Shaktish. Then how do you understand Krishna's name three times powerful, yet promising, etc.? Krishna has
You had mentioned about Taraknam and Paraknam. Would you like to say something more about that?
Yes, thank you.
about Brihadbhagavatam and then Little Bhagavatam of Srila Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, etc. Sanatana Goswami wrote his Brihadbhagavatam as a kind of an expansion on Srila Bhagavatam, particularly most intimate devotees of the Srila Bhagavatam, especially the devotees of Vrindavan, the devotees of Krishna. But the presupposition of it, or the assumption that that book is based on, is that the audience understands and accepts that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as described in the first half of chapter 3, in Chandra-Prabha-Mansa-Krishna-Sumura-Swayama-Yadi. So Rupa Goswami wrote his local Bhagavatam, the smaller Bhagavatam, in order to actually take that assertion and explain it with all references from Vedic literatures in order to prove that Krishna is the supreme of all the personalities of Godhead. We know from Padma Purana that Krishna's name and Krishna himself are not different. And therefore, whatever principle, philosophical principle is there regarding Krishna is also applicable to his name. So, in the Lokal Bhagavatam, Srila Goswami spends quite some time quoting from the Vishnu Purana of all places. Vishnu Purana is the favorite book of the Sri Vaishnavas. And we're generally worshipping Lakshmi Narayana. But within the Vishnu Purana, there's a passage in which he quotes Parashar Muni regarding the Hiranyakashipu and also Ravana and finally Shishupala. There he says that the respective results of the same person in three different lives being killed by three different forms of the Lord are very significant. His argument is that Krishna is the most merciful of all the personalities of Godhead. And he points out, he says that when Hiranyakashipu was killed by Lord Narasimhadeva, he was completely ignorant of Lord Narasimha's identity. All he knew is that some extraordinarily powerful person who was able to fight with him came out of the pit. But he had no idea who it was. Certainly he had no idea that it was Vishnu. And so he died in ignorance at the hands of Lord Narasimhadeva. Because he hadn't developed any knowledge of the Lord, and he was more bewildered than reformed, he took his birth again as Ravana, and he retained the same passionate nature as the demon that he had in his birth as Hiranyakashipu. But as Ravana, he made the fatal mistake of trying to exploit the personal consort of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ramachandra. And for that offense, Valmiki tells us in the Ramayana, it was like trying to reach into the mouth of a hungry lion to pull out one of his teeth. So, he was killed again by Ravana, but this time he recognized that this Ramachandra is actually the same person who killed me in my last life as Narasimha. And so he had developed some knowledge of the Lord by that time. But his heart had still not been reformed because he didn't actually surrender to Lord Rama. But when he took his birth again as Shishupala, this time he remembered his two previous births. And he retained his extreme envy of the Lord. And in fact, he was meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day, all the time, but unfavorably. So Rupa Goswami is pointing out that the effect of his meditation on Krishna, and particularly he was actually chanting Krishna's name, even though it was derisive or it was hateful or whatever it was, by that exposure to Krishna's holy name, he was amassing some, what we call a jnana sukriti in bhakti. And when it came to reach a critical mass, so to speak, that's just the time that he was in the royal spa blasting in Krishna 100 times. And he had the arrangement that was that Krishna would tolerate 100 abuses, and after that he would kill him. So after his 99th abuse, he was beginning to utter his 100th blasting in Krishna. And no sooner had the words reached left his lips than the Lord's chakra left his finger. And as he saw this Sudarshan chakra spinning towards his neck, he realized in a split second that, well, wait a minute, this is actually the person that I love the most. This is my eternal Lord, who I've been acting like a demon for 3 births because of the curse of the 4 Kumaras and Vaikuntha. And now I'm going to die at the hands of Lord Krishna. So within a split second, his consciousness was reformed, and he resumed his eternal constitutional position in Vaikuntha as a doorman in Vaikuntha. So Srila Goswami says this is the special nature of the name of Krishna in particular. And this also explains why Mahabharata tells us that one name of Krishna is equal to so many names of Rama is equal to 1,000 names of Lord Krishna. So Krishna is actually more merciful. He helps us more. He reaches out to us more. He's more attractive. He's more reciprocal. In every way, a relationship with Lord Krishna is more satisfying with any other form of Lord, even though they're the same person. It's Prabhupada gives the example. Just like when the president, let's say the president of the United States, everyone calls him Mr. President all day long, and that's his identity, undeniably. But it's a special relationship that he has with his children or with his wife. They don't have to call him by that name. They have a more intimate revelation of who he is. That's a crude example, but the principle is similar to that. So Krishna's name is very special, and that's why Krishna's name in particular is glorified throughout the Shastra.
That is beautiful.
Another perspective on this. In all your holy names you have invested all your potencies. From Brahma Sanghita Dipajira Eva Hita Shantaram Abhupeta Dipayate Vibrita Hetu Samana Dharma Yastadrigeva Hicha Vishnu Taya Vibhati Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. There are so many manifestations of Vishnu Tattva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they're all equal in power. Still there's one original light from which all others are lit. So that's an example to say that Govinda, Krishna, is the original form of all the forms, although all are eternal. So another perspective is that all the forms of the Lord, they're all equal in potency, but they don't all manifest the full potency to the same degree. Krishna manifests fully in all respects as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whereas other forms, they have a specific purpose in their coming to this world. Krishna, of course, he comes also yada yada hi dharmasya glane bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham. Krishna comes, Rama comes, Nrsimha comes, when an uprising of irreligion, of adharma, needs to be staunched and dharma needs to be re-established. But as the Acharyas explain, Krishna comes. Actually, Krishna doesn't do all that. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he kills the demons, but that's done by his Vasudeva feature. His actual personality as the supreme enjoyer beyond any duties of this world. Namam karmani limpanti. He's not touched by any work. He has nothing to do with all of this. So Krishna, among all the forms of the Lord, he's unique. He has nothing to do with this world. He's only enjoying. And he's only reciprocating with his devotees. The whole business of vinashayata dushkritam is not done by Krishna per se. This is a very subtle understanding. Because in one sense, yes, Krishna, he's also known as Kamsa Nisudana, Madhusudana, Murari. He's known as the killer of these demons, but Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopijanda Vallabha Girivaradhari, this Krishna, he is not doing those things. So it's this, he's the same and not the same. How are we to understand? We can't understand by any material means, but we just accept it and then we understand it. So all the forms of the Lord, who are all non-different from their holy names, are all unlimited, of infinite potencies, but still all forms are equal and all are of infinite potencies, but one is more infinite than others. There can be infinity which is more than other infinity, and that's explainable in a simple way. Even infinity is a mathematical, taken as a mathematical construct, is explainable in a simple way. If we think of a set of numbers, 1, 11, 21, 31, 41, 51, up to infinity, add 10 every time, and then add them all together, and it's infinitely large number. If we also add up the numbers in between, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, so that goes to infinity, and all of those added together, that's also infinitely large, but it's more. That's maybe a philosophical question. Is it more or isn't it more? Let the mathematicians work that out. Anyway, that's apparently, according to, maybe that's one for Rick to investigate. The philosophers of mathematics seem to concur that the set of the numbers in between is more than the first set. Anyway, it's a rough example. We're trying to understand things which are beyond our ability to understand through logic and reason, therefore called achintya, not understandable fully by our brain power. So it's a fact that all the potencies of the Lord are invested in all His holy names. It's also a fact that the 1,000 names of Vishnu is equal to one name of Rama, and three names of Rama is equal to one name of Krishna. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has made some analysis in this regard about primary names of Krishna, specific names like Krishna, Govinda, Gopinath, which pertain to his form as the supreme enjoyer and the supreme object of love for his devotees, and names like Jagadish, Srishtikarta, Paramatma, names which are more like titles, just like you gave that example of the president. If we say Mr. President, or if we say Pranab Mukherjee, or his wife says, I don't know what she calls him. Probably outside their family, no one knows. Or someone, his friend, old-time friend, may call him Pranab. So it refers to the same person. But I, or any of us, if we approached him, we should approach him respectfully, Mr. President. Only someone who's very intimate with him will address him by his first name. So in the same way, there are names of the Supreme Lord which are suitable for those who approach him with great respect, and naturally he reciprocates in the same way. If we approach the president, Mr. President, very respectfully, then he'll reciprocate in that way as the president. And when his friend meets him and says, Pranab da, Bengali, da, you say to, well, that's also a little respectful to his brother. Then he'll reciprocate with him in the same way. The same person, addressed by different names, by people according to the level of their relationship with him, and he reciprocates in different ways. So it's a great topic, nama tattva. That's that question, because it's a very good question. It could open up when we hear in the Bhagavatam of great sages, they sit on the higher planets and they sit and discuss points of understanding Vedic philosophy. We find in the prayers of the personified Vedas that there are sabhas going on in the heavenly, beyond the heavenly planets, of great sages who are discussing all these points, and they can't come to any conclusion, so they may send Bhrigu Muni. Who is the Supreme? Okay, you go and find out. And then he comes back and reports to them. So these are the kind of discussions. Actually, these discussions of Naam Tattva on Krishna, even beyond the Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, Satyaloka, these, the topics that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give, they're even Brahmara Durlabha Prema, they're even beyond the the imagination of Brahma, what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to give. Prema Sankirtan. So this Sankirtan, the demigods, they can worship Krishna very respectfully. That Rupa Goswami, what is that? Shruti, what is that? Do you know that verse? From Namashtaka of Rupa Goswami. All the great, the Vedas themselves, they worship the tips of the toes, figuratively, of the lotus feet of the holy name of Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given this to us to chant. So these topics remain discussed. Definitely, if we brought scholars from different sampradayas, they would say different things. In the Madhva Sampradaya, they'd become very angry if you say this. That one name is more powerful than another. They say that all the forms are the same, according to them. Here in Sri Rangam, the same topic was discussed between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Venkata Bhatta. That who is the most powerful, or the original form of the Lord? So it's not exactly the same as the name, as Naam Tattva, but it's very intimately interlinked, because Naam, the name of the Lord, the form of the Lord, the personality, his qualities, they're all non-different. But still different also, because especially in Kali Yuga, the name of the Lord, his manifestation as the name, awards freedom from material existence, freedom from sinful reactions, and over and above that, love of Krishna, more readily than even the form of the Lord. So here in Sri Rangam, Venkata Bhatta and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discussed various... Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Venkata Bhatta that, well, Lakshmi is the wife of Narayana and Krishna is Narayana. So then why did Lakshmi, as described in the Shastra, why did she perform tapasya to try to join the rasa dance and still she couldn't do it? She's still waiting in Kamyavan on the other side of the Yamuna. She couldn't enter into Vrindavan. And it's actually a very important understanding for Gauriyas, because then that comes up that Gopi Anugatte Aishwarjagana Vine Bajile Ho Napai Brajendra Nandane, that even Lakshmi, while maintaining the mentality of the Supreme Lord as being the Supreme Lord with all opulence, without following in the footsteps of the gopis, she can't attain, no one can attain Krishna in Vrindavan. So this question could lead into many days and many lifetimes of discussion. We're chanting Hare Krishna, that is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kevala Ananda Kanda, very easy, very simple. But the holy name of Krishna, the truths concerning that are very deep, unfathomable. He's revealed himself. He revealed, how will we understand the truths of the holy name? Atashri Krishna Namadi Nabhavad Grahyam Indriyai Sevan Mukhe Hi Jivado Swayam Eva Spuratyada. These truths are given by Shastra, by our acharyas, especially our Gauriya acharyas. They are revealed in the heart of a devotee who chants the holy name with a service mood. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada taught us the meaning of the Hare Krishna mantra. O Krishna, O energy of Krishna, please engage me in your service. And this is the perfect understanding of the Hare Krishna mantra, from the most neophyte devotee all the way up to Radharani. It's the perfect prayer. Of course, she is the energy of Krishna. Then everything will be revealed. But it's also good to discuss all these points. When everyone in the world is chanting Hare Krishna, and there's no more preaching per se to be done, then we'll sit and we'll discuss all these things for days and days on end. We have to train the children in the Gurukul so they can have a taste for the holy name. Most important thing, have a taste for the holy name. And also that they can, if they can enter deeply into the gifts of Shastras that Krishna has given us. So many great gifts our acharyas have given us. So, not so many are entering into all the intricacies. Of course, everything that we need to know to become fully Krishna consciousness, fully in Krishna consciousness, is in Srila Prabhupada's books. In another sense, they are the Srila Prabhupada, as every guru, introduces us to all the previous gurus. So there's so much nectar, too much nectar, more than we can imbibe, even one syllable of one shloka from the Bhagavad Gita is more than we can imbibe in millions of lifetimes. Okay, well, I guess you're next. Well, I spoke, so you can speak. Hmm? Okay, in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 12, purport, Srila Prabhupada states that there are many devotees who assume themselves to be in Krishna conscious, but at heart do not accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as the absolute truth. For them, the fruit of devotional service going back to Godhead will not be attained, I think it should be. Certainly, it's written here, tooted, very strangely. What type of devotee is it? Yeah, that's probably the right question. More like an animal than a human, a devotee. Is it? Which type of devotee? Yeah, the word devotee, Srila Prabhupada, and within Shastra, Bhakti Shastra itself, is used in various ways, in various contexts. Sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, someone who chants the holy name of Krishna even once is a Vaishnava and is better than everyone else in human society. But then again we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's dear associate, Jagadananda Pandit, he says that not all chanting of the holy name is chanting of the holy name. So we're going to Nam Tapra again. Ashadu Sange Bhai Krishna Nam Nahi Hoy. Bahirai Nam Akhar Bote Tabu Nam Akhabunai. He says that if one is not in the association of devotees, his chanting of the holy name will not actually be chanting of the holy names. It will be the sound is there as if it's the holy name. But Krishna doesn't manifest himself. He doesn't, just like you can buy a deity. You can say, I went to Vrindavan and bought Gaur-Nitai. I bargained with the shopkeeper and got a very good deal. I got Gaur-Nitai for only 500 rupees. So this kind of mentality, thinking this Arche Vishnu Shiladhir, that the Shiladhihi, that the deity is made of stone or brass. If you think that Krishna is a brass-made idol, then he will remain to you a brass-made idol forever. Srila Prabhupada warned. So there are levels of devotees. In one sense, we can say someone who's a devotee who's somehow or other chanting the holy name. But again, we are warned that Bahu Janma Kare Jadi Shravan Kirtan Tabuta Napai Krishna Pade Premadon. One can go on with the activities of Krishna conscious, hearing and chanting for many births, and not attain the fruit of that which is love of Krishna. If one is offensive in mentality, therefore sadhu sangha is required. Association with pure devotees of Krishna. And that's why shravan is required with kirtan. Hearing, sanmukharitam bhavadiyavaritam. Hearing throughout life, from devotees who have heard and who continue to hear from the living source. These are the English term used by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Someone who's connected with the original source of Krishna, who's connected with Krishna. Otherwise that chanting will go on, but there'll be no proper progress. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the example of rowing a boat with great vigor, but the boat is still tied to the peg on the bank of the river, so it doesn't go anywhere. So one may go through the motions of Krishna consciousness, but if one is tied up by attachment to this, material world, then he won't go anywhere. And we say, oh no, I've got so many attachments. But there should be a willingness to give up those attachments. Inability to hear from whom we should hear from means we can't make any proper progress. And even if we say to such a devotee, they can't hear. Even if it's pointed out to them that there's something amiss in your attitude by which you presume yourself to be in Krishna consciousness, but you're not properly situated, there's a problem with your attitude, they can't hear this. So for such persons, their devotees, in the Gaudiya literature there's a term Vaishnava Prai, means almost a devotee, something like a devotee. Or in the Bhagavatam, Sabhakta Prakrita Smitaha. They're devotees, but they're materialistic. A devotee means Mangshayovya Bicharena Bhakti Yogena Sevate Sagunan Samatityaitan Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate. Devotee is beyond the modes of material nature. But there are others who cultivate a materialistic mentality. So actually, a devotee means, bhakta means he's in bhakti. Bhakti is beyond the material sphere. But those who maintain a materialistic attitude, then they can't fully accept Krishna as supreme. They don't at heart accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For instance, if someone says, I'm going back to Godhead, but you are not going because you don't accept me properly, that means he thinks by his own strength he's going to storm the gates of Vaikuntha and charge in there. This is redolent of the story of the Brahmana and the prostitutes. The Brahmana was sure, or another one is the story of the Brahmana and the cobbler. The Brahmanas don't get a good rap, you know, in these stories. They presume, because they're doing all the activities of worshipping Krishna, that they must be close to Krishna, and someone who's a cobbler, he can't be close to Krishna because he has a very, very low class occupation. Or the prostitute, she can't be close to Krishna because she's very sinful. But in both cases, by the sincere mood of humility of the person who was in a sinful situation due to their previous activities, but due to their humility in considering themselves very lowly and fallen, they got the mercy of Krishna and were able to go to Krishna. But someone who, due to his previous pious activities, was able to worship the Lord, and becomes proud of that, then he goes a long way away from the Lord. So yeah, any it's a very big discussion. Who is a Vaishnava? That Satyaraj Khan and the inhabitants of Kulinagram, 3 years in a row, they asked this question of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because they said that, well, we're householder devotees, we're living at home. What should we do to make advancement? Please tell us. We just come to see you once a year. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that you associate with devotees and serve the devotees. Then who is a Vaishnava? 3 years in a row, they asked that question. 3 years in a row. First they got the answer, whoever is chanting Hare Krishna, he's a Vaishnava. Second year, who is a Vaishnava? Who is always chanting the holy names? And the third year, just by seeing whom? Yeah. Jardarshane Matro, I just can't remember now. By seeing whom others start to chant is the topmost Vaishnava. So the word devotee may be used to mean someone who's has some kind of devotee. Srila Prabhupada several times said that everyone in India is a devotee of Krishna. For that matter, every jiva is a devotee of Krishna. That we just sung in this that song of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that how lamentable it is that every jiva is Haridas, servant of Krishna, but he doesn't recognize it. So anyway, I won't speak more now. And you can... Oh, you yourself? What's the time now? 6:50, so it's time for arati. What should we do after arati? Go on chanting Hare Krishna. On and on. Otherwise we could continue the questions. Just sometimes the kirtan, it just goes on. Who's going to say, stop the kirtan? Only Lord Nityananda can do that. Stop the kirtan. Nityananda. That is described how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is doing kirtan on and on and on, hours and hours. In the meantime, the devotees were exhausted and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu couldn't notice at all because he was just absorbed after hours and hours of kirtan. He was in full bliss. And then Swarup Damodar, well, what did he see? We started at Mangalarti time and it's already midday and no one ate anything, no one did their noon, it's already hot in the midday and everyone's exhausted, but we can't stop Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's ecstasy of chanting. So Nityananda told each devotee one by one, stop chanting. So one devotee stopped chanting. Then another one stopped, another one. In the meantime, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And all of a sudden he realized there's no one else chanting. What happened? And then Swarup Damodar told him, well, actually, you see, it's midday now, and okay. All right. You have to go take bath and take your prasad. All right, all right. And he could understand.
It's hard.
It's so fortunate. Go on like this. What is that? The devotee, jivo ma, jivo va, maro va, live or die. You go on chanting here. You go on chanting there. Devotee chants Hare Krishna throughout his life. And then the next life just continues chanting Hare Krishna. So, Hare Krishna. Music finished. Hare Krishna! Srila Prabhupada ki jai.